Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. Also, give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, and Tunnel Talk. And Sam Brown is back with the AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of a guy who's tested positive for COVID talking about WWE. The hottest takes, quite literally. Got a temperature. This week was the goodbye to Fox and the celebration of Canada. I don't know what exactly to call it. It's a Canadian week. Ironically, it was WWE week on the USA channel, but here on the Imps Adventures, it's both shows live from Canada, so it's Canada week, in spite of WWE's things. It's WWE week in USA. He's like, nah, it's Canada week in WWE, though. Edmonton, Alberta, and then Calgary. Where's Calgary? Calgary's also Alberta. Okay, I don't know Canada states. I hardly know America states. You got me to learn a whole other country. Definitely not. So anyway, let's bash on through it. As I said, yeah, not in the best condition. Hopefully I'm better pretty quickly because we've got stuff coming up here on the network. So I've got to be fit. So anyway, further ado, let's say goodbye to Fox. Let's say goodbye to the memories and literally please leave most of those memories alone. Jumping over to Edmonton, Alberta, Canada for Friday Night SmackDown.
That's why next week, Solo Sikoa, Cody Rhodes for the Undisputed WWE Championship in a steel cage.
Cody Rhodes opened the show, flexing on the sides of the crowd, thanking Kevin for the match, getting a chant for Michael Cole, pretty much just saying anything to procrastinate doing the Solo Sikoa segment. I feel you, Cody. Also, not to forget that this was also the Smackers after Berlin, not just the goodbye to Fox. So we got a goodbye to Fox montage and all throughout the show. Two highlights from the Vince times and everything else was from the past 2 years. Like, it's wise. It's like what? We're not showing the dog food segment. We're not doing that. We're not showing the Kofi squash. Like, we're not doing that. we're not showing that stuff. When Solo Sikoa did come out, the We Want Roman chants were louder the second time after Sikoa had to name the man in placing the blame for his slams of summer loss. As we go, for Solo getting his title match. Then the title match actually got set for the USA debut next week. And you know what? That I'm perfectly fine with. If we're going to be building to bad blood for this, it's like, I don't want to go through another cycle of this. But we're not. We're getting a cage match next week, just bashing right through it. Cody called out Jacob Fatu as the challenger he actually wants to see step up, really kind of leaning into the fan sentiment of the bloodline right now, where Sikoa is the guy on top. The Tongans are kind of just there, but Fatu is drawing so much attention. Just how quickly Fatu has gotten over in his role, to the point where they're already willing to script him in his own solo teasers. Like, oh, they know, they're immediately leaning in. But it's Triple H, so going to be leaning there for quite a while. Title match is next week in the cage. We've got time for a Teddy Long first, the Bloodline into the ring. DIY and the Puff is out for Bloodline after last week to make this an 8-man. Aldis setting us up, also making the Cody vs. Solo title match next week inside that steel cage. Also, so soon after the Swerve Hangman incredible lights out horror story, the PG-ness is just automatically just going to feel so apparent. It's going to feel so ordinary to anybody who existed through that cage match. WWE got the ways that they do their cage matches. I feel like the crowd are going to enjoy this one. It's going to be absolutely fine. Also, it's on television. So WWE cage matches are normally PG a bit more anyway. But also, this is a cage match on TV, which is so the normal PG-ness is going to be even more diluted because it's on television. We're talking to modern day WWE, who are currently muting, full on muting the audience of a crowd who chant any swear word. So F you Solo, immediately muted. Holy shit, immediately muted. They're allowed to say bitch and stuff, but I don't even know if they need like airing permission for that. That's the thing with TV, where if you hear a swear said by an official wrestler or somebody on the TV show, they've got permission to say a certain number of swears, which I, as an Englishman, I find insane. Just because for us, I think I said it before, for us we created this thing called the watershed, where after a certain time everybody is aware and everybody knows there's going to be swears, there might be boobies, there might be blood and violence, but you kind of expect it from 9 p.m. onwards. That's just like a known thing. So even if you like, if you watch Taskmaster, that airs at like 9 p.m. But it is a similar thing. But at 9 p.m, agreed thing. In America, there seems to be no such thing, and swearing at all at any point is a complete no-no. Just like at any point, swearing is a no-no. It's the thing I have to remind myself that Americans, they speak our language quite literally, but they are a foreign country, so a lot of their stuff is it doesn't. And this is one of those things where it's proved to me that America is a foreign country, because this seems wild to me. Their TV landscape couldn't be any more different than Europe. And this is just the UK. Like, there's stuff within Europe that I find like, oh, that's a bit more like this. Our standards sometimes in the UK can seem strict to the rest of Europe. Never mind America. And my point being that this cage match would feel PG on a WWE pay-per-view, but it's going to be on television, so it's going to really feel PG. Basically, I'm saying it like this because I don't think it's going to be bad. I don't think it's going to be rubbish. The excitement's going to be when the Bloodline come out. Ironically, it's going to be a match full of interferences, and that's what's going to be the exciting part or the huge moment. I doubt we're going to get Cody moonsaulting like we did in AEW, but maybe we might get a Jacob Fatu thing, just to use the cage to really build him up. Because that's kind of like with WWE stuff at the moment, the television. There's a lot of using a moment to set up character work rather than anything that you massively need to tune in for. But because of that, the more you watch, the more you get out of it. It was the thing that really worked for NXT back in the day, which Triple H was born to the main roster, where it wasn't the end of the world if you missed some of the television. However, you did get more out of it. You got more reward for watching those weekly NXT shows. You got more invested into those characters. You knew all the toys that they were playing with, all the tools they had at their disposal when it came to pay-per-view. And it's the same thing with television here, where they kind of use that to build up the pay-per-views. But the main event was the Street Profits and DIY versus the Bloodline. Four fired up tag lads for the show's top baddies faction to beat. Fatu positioned for a shine as he's the lad given the explosive spots. Your fun, fast-paced WWE multi-man main. DIY and the Profits all great with their own explosive spots. Dives and flips galore, pumping up the crowd damn hot. One hell of a DDT impaler sell from Ford. In another promotion, I'd be calling for a Ford versus Fatu singles match. But here, it did the job and made Big Jacob look damn awesome. Solo in for the spike on an already dead man. The baddies did get their win, and we got off from Fox with the Ula Fala and a raising of the wands. The Fox era is dead. Long may the Fox era stay dead. I feel like it's the final sentiment of that Vince era, of that deal that was made, and the stuff that was put on TV within those first like 3-4 years. So much of it was dreadfully bad. Because that's what I kind of think of. Like, I am so envious at the moment of people who've kind of just joined WWE like within the past couple of years. If you're a new fan, you didn't live through that. And there's a lot of hindsight questioning of why did people boo and why did da da da. And the only answer really is just go back and watch the stuff, and it will become apparent. If you're somebody who's interested in wrestling for some reason, have found this, stumbled across this podcast, and you're not an AEW person, listen to me. If you stumbled across it and you genuinely are interested, the best way to explain it is like literally just watch it. Just watch it, and that'll tell you everything. Like, I don't need to add any commentary as to why. why the Vince era was bad. The way to explain it is to just watch it. At the time, I would use the phrase, the best way to watch WWE was to not watch WWE, just to tune in for the pay-per-views. But nowadays, the opposite, with literally everything I just talked about. Bayley versus Tiffany Stratton. It obviously building again to another rematch with Bayley versus Nia Jax. But I'm loving all the little Tiffany Stratton little details that are going on at the moment. One, a visual one. Like, I love that Stratton's Money in the Bank now has a custom strap so she can wear it like a handbag. It just fits into a character so well. Such a great little detail. The match itself was a perfectly fine Teddy offering, giving us our Bayley back, but reminding us why Tiffy is Miss Money in the Bank in the first place. Damaged arm Bayley still hit her arm offense, but just went, ah, me arm, afterwards. Nia Jax out as distractor, just there to offer words of encouragement. Bayley diving onto her, but Jax accidentally up onto the apron and distracting the ref. Rose plant shortly after, and big dumb Nia stares down after costing her last the match. It's like, oh, I'm going to get you, Bayley. And she looked so dumb. Nia Jax is such a dumb kind of champion right there. Wait, that's my negative. My positive, Bayley and Tiffany Stratton both got elevated by this match, and, well, Bayley kind of like repositioned to be a believable champion again for Nia Jax, to get you behind her as the babyface, and Tiffany Stratton as the person where you eventually do want to see. They're building her up nicely. But, massive negative, Nia looked like a complete moron. And I do it as a negative, because they've done such a good job of building up Nia throughout this year, and into her run as the Queen of the Ring. And sure, there's a bit of cheesiness in there, but she's the exact right performer to just do cheesy stuff. Then as a champion as well, like, it all felt like she'd been elevated really well into this position. They'd finally got her over as this dominant champion. This week, complete moron. So even though she's champion, it feels like she's not escaping the quick kind of cringy, cheesy stuff. She's staying in that realm. But for me, it's partly a shame, because I don't want to accidentally create that sentiment in the audience of being done with her title reign already. One way to do that is to paint her as a bit of an idiot, as a moron. It's like, ugh. Other notes. Giovanni Vinci made his return and lost within seconds. Hilarity! Didn't even get to All Out before my Twitter feed was full of, yeah, a few in creative hated this. I can see why. Also, the answer is yes. His theme is generic and unmemorable. A decent theme could have really helped get this character over so much, even with this booking. But nope, oh well. And I know the logic is going to be him living this high life, not really taking it seriously, and then this is the thing that forces him to take it seriously. But first impressions matter a lot in wrestling. And first impression is that this guy is one big loser. So it's almost like they've built up to create a new loser. It's going to really struggle to get the fans interested in him after this. You've almost killed the character dead on arrival. I'll be so surprised if they don't try and build him up after this. But you've created a wall for no reason. Vince did this all the time. Just created walls and ceilings for no reason, which was so difficult to break through, and he would just give up. The difference is, we've seen it with Triple H, where he's not as quick to give up on things. So you can actually let something play out and see where it goes. It's just they've put a needless ceiling there. And I saw this under Vince, that the ceiling would be there and eventually they'd just give up and the guy would just become a jobber. I've seen that pattern so many times under the Vince era. So I'm not saying that he's going to go that way, because we're not in that era anymore. Creative isn't that. They're not that anymore. There's still loads of tropes within there. This even happening is a trope. But this being a permanent ceiling for him now, it was a needless ceiling to put there, but it doesn't mean it's permanent, because we've not got the same creative. It's not the same kind of mind. When they say let it play out, I do actually believe they've got an idea. Doesn't mean it's good, but they've actually got one, which is the difference. Also, I put Kevin Owens in the other notes. He was backstage and, like all Canadians do daily, reminiscing about Wayne Gretzky, which sent us into the exact match you were expecting, and I think that I said it would be on the show last week. But huzzah, the Theory and Waller split up teasing finally went somewhere, with pins broken and arguments ensuing. So it actually went somewhere, even though I was like, I swear to God, if he's in a match with Theory and Waller, I'm gonna. And lo and behold, he's had his title match and he's in the exact same position, but at least his opponents went somewhere. His character's been on a journey to go only to return to the exact same opponents, but at least he's, like, it feels like it might be going. I don't know. It actually went somewhere at this point. US champion LA Knight, a little over 30 days into his reign. Melo, the interrupting baddie. Andrade, the baddie interrupting goodie. Cheap shot Melo, but Karma's fast as him chatting shit over Andrade positioned him nicely for a blunt force trauma, as I assume we set up a triple threat. Mia Yim faced Chelsea Green. Piper Niven distraction set up Crazy Mia taking a flat back bump falling off the apron. Running centre from Piper back into the ring for the unpretty her, poor Mia in a title program one moment, losing here. That's it. Chelsea Green is a position where she's generally getting over. I feel like this win with Mia really helps Chelsea Green. Mia is somebody who at the moment is taking full advantage of any TV time. So I'm in two worlds where I feel like as a TV character, done really good work to position Mia as someone for the fans to be invested into. This one did a lot of that. So as a TV character, it's kind of like, ah. But as like Mia Yim herself, the actual worker, this is one of those things where she's taking full opportunity of her TV time again. So it's a weird one of two worlds where she's really proving that she can be such a trusted TV performer. And she really is taking opportunity of anything presented before her. But yeah, this wasn't good. But again, he just felt that as I was watching it. We've seen that be applauded in a different company. We are seeing somebody do that same thing and it's like, well, here's WWE's opportunity. Do they reward the same kind of behaviour here? But yeah, that was SmackDown. Perfectly fine. Again, a lot of stuff in other notes. It wasn't like a grand send-off to Fox. It was almost like or even just a nod of acknowledgement. Just to be like, yeah, we're kind of happy this era's over. Like, as a fan, I'm happy to say goodbye to the sentiments from the Fox era. Just move on properly into a new era for USA. I am very excited for the next few months, because suddenly we've got two shows that are only 2 hours long. It's like, oh God, yes. Raw for USA with their little extension to the end of the year, only 2 hours. SmackDown, moving to USA, 2 hours. Initial reaction's like, yes, this is the era that I have been so calling for. As a fan of like of wrestling in general, there's way too much on at the moment. And every single week, Raw drags. The 3 hours, every single week it drags. And it's been on TV for so long at that length, there's a whole generation of people who've never even seen Raw as a two-hour show. And it's far better. Not even close. It's a kind of perfect length for a wrestling show is that 2 hours. 3 hours is too long. You will get the odd episode, which is paced really well, and it kind of just works. But 3 hours is way too long. It's the last thing I want is a three-hour show. But there's a massive but here, though. Once the Netflix era starts, the thought is Raw will be 3 hours. USA then wants SmackDown to be 3 hours. And I put my hands on my thighs, lean forward and just go, no. So I'm going to go from a 3 hour show and a 2 hour show, and the whole time me being like, I really would love the 3 hour show to just be 2 hours, and getting that dream. And I'll get that dream for about 3 or 4 months. And then it's like, oh yes, the dream world, only in the new year for both shows to be 3 hours. Like, no. I'm already not watching Collision that often. Never mind now when the amount's about to jump up in the new year. Oh dear. Anyway, with that said, let's jump on over to the second half of Canada Week. Let's jump on over to Calgary, Alberta for Monday Night Raw.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You have always been a childhood hero for me. So I wanted to take a moment to tell you personally that you will always be a close second to my actual favorite. And my all-time favorite is none other than Bill Goldberg. So Brett, join them.
Gunther and his hero. He had the opportunity just to share the ring with a living legend and tell him. It's so well done. It feels like it's going to be one of the WWE TV moments of the year just because of it. Just so well done. Also, look how special legends feel when they're not relied upon as they were and beating the current roster like they were before this era. I honestly feel so envious of the new fans, like of the years of that needless ceiling where the current roster were able to get over, but only to a certain point because they weren't allowed to get more over than the legends. And you got loads of legends nights throughout the course of the year when like be a ratings dip. You maybe got like one or two a year. It's like it's going to be a legends night. And you get something like DX coming out, beating up FDR, and then DX walking away. So the current lads have been made look like chumps, and they don't ever get the momentum back for that moment. Oh, yeah, it was such a needless... Not only did the current product have that investment problem I was talking about earlier, but also a legend would come back and beat them up to make it look like chumps, because the legends were the actual guys who were the most over, not any of the current roster. Constant reminder of how good it was back in the day, just constantly reinforced. But now, everybody's over. Hooray, positivity. It's another thing that puts the current era into a spotlight. Like, no, just remember how bad it was. An applauding reaction for old Brett. Canada showing their love. Him saying, the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. The crowd chanting it along with him. When out comes the European hero. I cheer. Canada boos. The boos were incredible for the World Heavyweight Champion. They were not liking him taking their man's catchphrase and using it to refer to himself. Being like, yeah, you were the best there ever was. Just like, oh, look, it's so good. Talking about Bret Hart as a childhood hero. Like, from the bottom of my heart, you will always be a close second to my favourite Bill Goldberg. Like, I swear I could see both Bret and Gunther doing their best to keep a straight face through the crowd's reaction to the first half of that sentence. And you can see on their faces, like, they were just excited for the reaction to what was about to be said next. Both of them being like, well, they're reacting already. The line's not even got to the good part. I really enjoyed just watching all of that. Sami Zayn then out to a mega pop in the local Calgary hockey jersey of the player that died. I'll get to that later. Really passionate about Bret and being Canadian and challenging Gunther to the World Heavyweight Championship, who responds, with all due respect to Bret, you're not in my league. And Sami, you're far away from being in the league of Bret Hart. So my answer is still no. So that, for me, that's how you do it. You bring out the legend. He's put the legend down, but he's also positioned the legend as a really top guy to use him to then go, this guy is so damn good, but I'm better and you're not even in his league. It's really, really good stuff. Bret Hart then just straight up calling the champion a gutless yellow coward. The Canadians all for the Sami Zayn lampings on the champion afterwards if he charged back in. So really amping up, and feels like they're doing a decent job of slowly bubbling Gunther into accepting Sami Zayn's challenge. I thought this was that was a lightning bottle of a segment. Really, really well done. And again, it's just to see legends, how the Triple H era, how they're going to use legends. And this was a really, really good use of a legend. The show itself, though, kicked off with the street fight, which I thought was such a good idea. How refreshing to see Monday Night Raw kick off with a built-up match rather than a standard WWE structure promo. It received 20 minutes too, Like, just seriously rare for a WWE show. Oh, don't worry, we got the promo segment afterwards, but in terms of, like, the pacing of the show, that helped so much. Like, compared to starting with a promo, then a match you care about, match you don't as much care about, and then you got, like, loads of backstage segments and things, and then it kind of just drifts into the second hour, and then the second hour will kick off with something that you really care about. Basically, structuring it like this, with a big built-up match, then just means the pacing is far better. Because we got the promo segment after this, then we got the match we kind of somewhat care about, then we kick off the second hour. Like, there's no lull. You're straight into that second hour. Such much, much better structure. But Wyatt 6 versus American Made. Absolutely love Chad Gable in this role. I love the Creed Brothers in this role. Ivan Allen fits into the group really well. But I dare you to sing their theme song. No, don't YouTube it. You can't hum along to it. Death Rebel Strikes Again. What is their theme? Vaguely America, but with no recognisable notes. Please. Nikki Cross and Ivy Nile immediately going kendo stick and trash can fun times. The lads started off by just doing their nothing brawls in the background as the women were given the spotlight to brawl over the announce table. Gable with a kendo stick changed that. Big Red ain't selling any of that though. Instead, beating them all up and being gifted the now staple, it's a table pop. Only to get American Made to go through the table. No ad breaks either really helped this feel a bit more special. The crowd responding so well for every little thing the Wyatt Six did. Gacy handspringing, Loomis leg dropping, it didn't matter. It all got great reactions. Gacy kendo stick walloping in a trash can. A funny minute as the Canadians are kind to Cross and Niles roll over the announce table, then forgiving of the invisible offense Gable bumps for as he charged at trash Gacy. Just seemed to run at him. Gacy didn't do anything, and then he just took a back bump as if he'd hit his head on the trash can. And that came like immediately after. Like, the crowd were very kind in their reaction to the women rolling over that announce table. But a damn great pop immediately swung the momentum back as Rowan woke back to life with force after that table through ringside, kicking down a section of the barricade, taking down all of American Made with the heavy but padded weapon. The crowd loving the closing flow with Loomis and Gacy springing back to life. Loomis's leg drop through the table to a huge pop. Gable's top rope angle slam to Gacy through another table, an even bigger pop. Nikki Cross's apron drape spinning DDT onto a pile of chairs. Who knows? They cut the sound because the Canadians were chanting holy shit. Get a grip, American television. Gable accidentally calling Uncle Howdy into action, taking a chokeslam onto the steel steps, so he's out for the Wyatts to take out the rest of them. One hell of a Sister Abigail cell from one of the Creeds, I want to say Julius, with the lad properly spiking onto his head. Loomis, the lad who got to frog smash and score the pin on poor Gable, and what a fun match this was. The Wyatts were coming out, and I want to say the match started about 9 minutes into the show, because now they're starting off the shows with the two commentators into the ring. Then they do the characters walking into the arena, telling us what's going to be on the show. Then you get the promo packages. Then it goes into the match. Because, well, of course, like, the promo package was to do with this match, and he got the full-on entrances and everything. It felt like a huge deal. And I talked about before the show telling you whether something's important or not. The show was telling you just how important this match was, and they stuck with it. It really gave it time. So even though they didn't start till nearly 10 minutes into the show, they were still going at like 25, 30. So they really gave this time to flow, and the crowd really enjoyed it. The Wyatt Six are so over. So over. I then want to talk about Drew McIntyre, just quickly, because it's still not really a lot to add to the notes that I've said before with Drew McIntyre, but this was a great little humorous heel promo in memory of CM Punk the week after he sent him to the hospital. Love how, with Punk gone, the Scot just became a full-of-life character. He's just full of life and potential. Like, I can do all of these things. I can go after all of these people. I can right all of these wrongs. I could become a champion. Is he able to dream again? Instead, however, he turned his attention to his oldest friend, Wade Barrett, painting Drew as so paranoid that he's convinced himself his only defender left is another enemy. So even though he was talking about all these things he could do, immediately it's painted. He could do all those things if he just stopped getting in his own damn way. Then Adam Pearce out and getting to growl that it will be in Hell in a Cell. I'm not going to growl it, my voice is going. As it's confirmed for Bad Blood to fully end the rivalry. And that this is the kind of match that this feud has actually been building up to, rather than the silly fun game they did in Berlin. No. This, this is the actual animosity here. Obviously, with the silly fun game in Berlin, they then had to build up the animosity, which is what the segment was for last week. Yeah, it's all fine. Yeah, it's all building up nicely. Hell in a Cell is one of the few matches in WWE that actually gets a little bit more violent. Still nothing compared to like the competition, but I want my companies to be different. I'm not saying it as like a negative factor for WWE. It's a genuine thing of difference, and I'm perfectly fine with that. The Intercontinental Championship number one contenders tournament final. Jey Uso, Pete Dunne, Braun Strowman, and Ilya Dragunov. Like, this was all right, wasn't it? Apart from Braun Strowman's charges around ringside, which somehow completely missed their target. I don't even know how that's possible. Given plenty of time to flow too. One hell of a super kick from Jey to a coast-to-coast attempting Ilya. That sent us into an ad break. That was a lovely little spot. Also, I liked how the big straw man was the big shifter of momentum, where you got your little flows with the three other lads. But whenever Strowman came in, the match kind of then triggered into the next phase, like each time he burst through something. Setting up our final flows of interference incredibly well. Strowman setting up the announce table, only for Bronson Reed to appear out of nowhere and splash through him and the desk. This was done so well. Just the way that they talked about Strowman throughout the show, and the way that they reminded us about the car spot and why Strowman was in the match. Basically, but they did it in a way like they were telling us why Strowman is holding his ribs like he is. And then he goes into the match, and I just wasn't expecting Jonah. At all. I wasn't expecting any Bronson Reed. So when he came out in the main event, for me that was like a huge surprise. I thought they'd done really well throughout the show to paint a world where he's not here. Paint why Strowman might lose because he's damaged, I wasn't expecting the guy to actually turn up. Leaving just Jey, Ilya, and Peter, the three each seemingly having their moment, but the bitter end escaped and the H-bomb nailed soon after, only for Dragunov to be dragged out and Jey Uso to splash for the win. Loud yeet chants in time with the music and celebration after. A little too long, as Bron Breakker standing in the ring with his title got cut off right as he walked up to his contender. It's like, he didn't get to get the big stare down moment that he wanted. But I assume it happened. I saw Bron Breakker walk closer and then off goes the feed. It's like, oh well. But yeah, a fun main event. Nothing like crazy to write home about. I wasn't expecting my biggest reaction to be for a Braun Strowman moment. But yeah, when Bronson Reed turned up, it was like, oh, Jeremy caught me by surprise. And then I've got a ton of other notes. First off, a lovely moment acknowledging the Gaudreau brothers. Johnny, a huge hockey star, and his brother, who were both killed by a drunk driver. And getting Jackie, who's somebody who had actually interviewed the guy, cut the segment as well and just talk outside showing all of the flowers and things. That was a really well done segment. Also, before I get into the other notes, this was a much better paced show. Probably the best paced in months. Having the promo segment second instead of opening was a big part of that. But the dreaded second hour was also far better. It just flowed so much better. Segment staying on focus and none of that returning from an ad break to an interview promo backstage or like a promo packagey thing. It's just like, no, we just stayed with what we told you was going to happen. far, far better. The Women's Tag Team Championship, so only in the other notes, because we've legit just watched this match at Batch in Berlin. Like, don't be putting that Vince booking out on me trips. They do work well together, so I'm not going to critique it too hard. Finn Balor came out to deliver his scripted lines. Much needed for the Priest/Balor rivalry, though. A segment just saying all the things they've already told us, just directly and amped up, setting up the match at Bad Blood. Again, in another company, I'd be massively critiquing this, just because you're telling me stuff you've already told me in a way which is totally unbelievable because the character is just talking all of their motivations, so it's bad writing. But in a WWE world, this is how they tell their stories. And this was a moment which, for WWE, this was the moment that's kind of like, this is just reminding you of all of the stuff. So we're directing in a tunnel with all the information there, then set up the match of Bad Blood. Bringing out all of the related characters and Yeet Association, which I was so sure was setting up a main event interference, that never came. It was like, you know what? Well done. You held back from just doing that. Maybe you're going to do it in the title match, but you didn't do it directly here. We then got more Judgment Day versus LWO. Got to fill time, I guess. Gave Finn a win before our eyes, though, which was pretty important. Something that had been lacking. And finally, Zelina Vega and Lyra Valkyria had Natalya as their mystery partner for the Big Canada to take on the Pure Fusion Collective. Pure Fusion Collective, they didn't get any entrance, but they got to cut a promo. Again, a pretty generic promo. Just being like, we're beating you up every week. So, and you keep coming back for more. Like, who's your partner going to be? Whoever it's going to be can't defeat us. Oh, okay, we've lost. This type of stuff. Like, well. But yeah, that was the WWE week in Canada. Two pretty fun shows, if not like desperate for you to need to watch anything. A WWE segment of the year with Gunther's promo on Bret Hart. That was amazing. That was so well done. Everything else, though, we're just kind of still continuing to bubble the characters and confirming where we're going, pretty much. As like commentary, we're confirming Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley. Finn Balor, it was in the ring, again, just stating motivations to then confirm him versus Priest as well. All the stuff that fits the Bad Blood show, which I feel like is, you know, that's pretty smart way to go about it. It just means like the show's not like super amazing to watch. It was the best paced Raw in a long time, but I was still knackered and done with it by the end, which tells me everything about 3 hours. Like, even when it was paced better, I was done with this show before, like, for the final hour. I just wanted it to be over, which then fills me with dread for 2025. Actually, that should be it. This was the week that I generally had a decent time watching and covering these shows, but also filled me with dread for the new year. It's like, oh God, no, everything's going to be 3 hours. Oh no. I definitely trust this creative team more than I did previously. So if this deal came under like the Vince era, I would have been dreading it so badly. But under this current era, I was like, I trust it a bit more. But the 3 hours still drags, as of both shows being 3 hours. Like, no, no. The actual quality of the product takes a hit, but you get more money in because of the level of advertisement you're able to put into it is more. So that's why a network will always push for this. That's for the major difference between WWE and AEW is WWE have got the stock market to actually care about. They are a public company, and their number one thing is to actually appease the investors. AEW can do different stuff. They're not in that world. It doesn't really matter. They can do blood and gore and shit because they're not going to piss off any investors. There are no investors to piss off. Piss off the network, sure. But, you know, they've done much worse stuff than this week. Anyway, with that, I say I am going to go and die. I'm really proud that I got through this, like, given the amount I know. I'm not in good condition. I've been shivering and doing random shakes whilst I've been recording this. So I'm going to go and die for a little bit. I can't be ill in 2 weeks' time. I've got to be better. So anyway, with that, I say thank you for listening, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week. Hopefully better. Like, if I might not be back next week, I might have to take the week off to actually recover. But in that case, I'd see you in 2 weeks to talk about the week of WWE as we get towards Bad Blood. So with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.